So I'd like to just offer a brief introduction for Rodney. So I first met Rodney back in 1997 at a Cloud Mountain retreat, my first retreat, and something about his teaching really resonated in a very deep way. And so he's really my primary teacher, most significant teacher for all these years. Rodney was founded Seattle Insight back in, I think, 98. And so that's when he became this very thriving organization. He's also been the guiding teacher at IMS, has taught many retreats across the nation at Cloud Mountain, IMS, Dharma, Southern Dharma, and other centers. And then also, Rodney spent about 8 years in the monastic settings, including years in Asia, studying on Ajahn Buddhadasa. So please give a warm welcome to Rodney Smith. Thank you, Rodney, so much for offering this. This is his last teaching here in a formal way at Seattle Insight. So we're very blessed to have him. Thank you, Rodney.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you. I
Good.
just want to scan the audience for a second just to let my heart meet you and appreciate you. This is Tinder because I've been in relationship with many of you over a prolonged period of time, and this is the formal ending of my teaching at Seattle Insight. And there's no other Dharma organization, no other Sangha that resonates as deeply with me as this one. So I just want to acknowledge that and appreciate the people I see. So I'm going to get right into it. I'm very interested in stretching you. This is a perilous time, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. But it's a I've always in my teaching to all of you over the many years, I've always tried to stretch us, so that we wouldn't settle comfortably in the Dharma, thinking that we had some kind of resolution to it. There's no resolution to the Dharma. It's continuous forever. And I don't want the last public talks I give to make you seem like you've got it all together now, okay? Because we'll never have it together. The fact is that as long as we think we have it together, we have a long way to go. And so that sense of wonder, that sense of mystery, that sense of the next exploration necessary, the next inquiry, it's a forever experience of Dharma, and thank God it doesn't resolve. So, this teaching this weekend, I've sort of taken the two sutras that are most compelling to me, and also to many established foundations over hundreds and hundreds of years, and try to melt them together so that we can see our way forward. If this weekend has anything, it has just an attempt to point towards the forever of Dharma and to keep us working the rest of our lives within that journey. It doesn't mean that there isn't an ongoing acknowledgement of a deeper sense of settledness and love within us that doesn't feel unsettled. In fact, over the many years of Dharma, we feel increasingly settled, but this not finished. Finished in the sense that there's a resolution. It's not a resolution, But the deeper sense of settledness is one of the profound effects it has upon each of us. And this is the culmination of that, to study these two suttas and to begin to look at our lives in terms of the quality of life we live in the broadest sense of that word. Not an exclusive sense of individuality and attainment, because that's the wrong way to go on this completely. But let us just open up to today's turmoil and look at what we're doing. And we think we're doing what's right. But is what is right for us divisible in its broadest expanse? And because what I see happening here is something that is, I sense it. I sense that we are evolving, that consciousness is in a state of evolution. It's always been in a state of evolution, but sometimes it hits points that are obvious to those who are living within that evolution. That's all of us and all of life on this planet. And you get a sense that this is different. This is a different kind of calamity. Because when something evolves, it evolves out of itself into something new. And in that turning point from where we are to where we're going is often a lot of conflict and pain and suffering, basically, because we're not willing to let go of what we have been to see where this is taking us. So I believe we are evolving out of self-centeredness. I believe the I consciousness has had its day. 2 million years of the evolution of I consciousness has taken us where we are today. And where we are today is in the midst of climate change and overpopulation, 8 billion people. You can't have 8 billion people on a small planet and expect there not to be trouble and friction and conflict. There's pandemics and migration. Of course, there's going to be, with climate change, you can't stay in 120 degree heat and expect to live. And there is the contracted spirit that we see very obviously in front of us. That's the attempts to falsify the truth, to make it livable within a lie, if I can be blunt. Within division, within acrimony. And that's all of the evolution of self, all the evolution out of self has all those forces acting upon it. And so it's not to, we have to be careful that we have the deciding perspective. We have the perspective that's right. And that's I'm just going to keep being right. Well, what does right mean to you? Does it mean connected, or does it mean separate and argumentative? Because it doesn't, this journey needs our participation in the collective, not in the individual argument. And I see many of us, and when us, I'm talking about Dharma settings, Dharma people, picking the acrimonious side of all of this. And it's as a individual who has lived on this planet for 79 years, and I mean I have the same leanings towards truth and freedom and individual respect and that all of us do that are dharmically oriented. But I also realize that there's something greater going on here that needs my release of all the friction into the expanse of the evolution. And it's useful to remember, I think, the direction the spiritual journey takes. So this is the beginning of how we can become a part of that evolution. And these two suttas, I'm not going to keep saying sutra because that's the Theravadin expression, and sutta, which is the other way around. Sutta is the Theravada, and Sutra is the Mahayana expression of that. So what is the spiritual journey? You see, well, it's very important. We are releasing the conceptual layer of mind that hides the deeper truths of reality from view. We're releasing that. And we're held, the sense of I, the sense of us, the sense of individuation, the sense of object identification, the sense of separation, the sense of all of this is held within the conceptual framework of the mind. So it's a layer of mind that we have placed upon something that is profoundly unconditioned. It has no conditionality to it. And the spiritual journey is to move towards, out of this frame of reference, this conceptual layer of mind, which has all the tension and individuality and conflicts associated with it, into the deeper, abiding, unconditioned truth of reality. So we're moving towards the intrinsic truth of what and who we are. Okay, so we've been living in a fictitious conceptual world. And that's why you can't live in a conceptual world without there being problems, because you're making things up as you go along. That's what concept means. It means conditioned view, the conditioned way we've learned what life is, not the actual sense of life. Well, you know, what's interesting about the world as we have depicted it is that we have depicted it as separate and discrete objects. And there is nothing substantial or real about it in actuality. It is all based upon the conjecture of an organism, of an organ, that's my mind, that itself cannot sense the world. It's the mind, the brain, is encased in darkness. And it is the one that is telling us what's in front of our eyes, the objects. It's never seen any of it. It gets neurological stimulations from the different senses, but as the brain itself has been encased in darkness, it doesn't know what it's seeing. It's making it all up. And so there's confusion and there's disarray, and there's what life is, full of conflicts and sorrow and also happiness and joy. But it's because we have to encourage it out to be able to see in the light of awareness. And it doesn't know about the light of awareness. It's never had that influence shine upon it. So you see, I mean, until we're willing to move outside of ourselves, basically, it's not a wish list anymore. It's a pay attention here, you know. It's like, well, I got to pay attention to this. This is important. All of the future of our civilization and the way forward with humankind is at stake. So the sense of isolated parts, you know, this sense of distance of all. Over the years, I've been taking apart distance and I've been taking apart time to show you that's how fabricated it is, how made up it is. And that's all because of the mind being encased in darkness and can't see. So is there a way to bring light in? Is there a way which is... It's hard for me. It's hard to talk about it, because when you talk about it, you're really talking about releasing the fiction of the friction. And so we have to ascribe to a different way of understanding ourselves and all things in order for us to be able to enter that light of truth. So what we're doing is we're removing the conceptual layer that the mind is placed upon how and what we sense the world to be, and exposing what is underneath, which is the unconditioned. And now, don't make the unconditioned some distant and far-reaching object. It's not. It's intrinsic to what is already occurring. It's intrinsic because it is the essence of life. The unconditioned has been covered over by mind, creating the fictitious representation of life. We remove the conceptual layer and we expose the unconditioned, and then we live the authentic life. And that's the resolution of the spiritual journey. And I don't know if you've ever heard it put like that, but I'm not, you know, you can say, well, who's he? You can say that, or you can go, we'll live near the sensing that each of us have, that this, oh yeah, this makes sense to me. This is, of course, this is the way to go. I've never followed the path of history, of the centuries of commentary and beliefs. I've never felt that, because aliveness in me and in all of us is new and relevant and present. And if those mysteries are hidden from me, then there's no hope for any of us, because there's nothing that I'm not obstructing. And I want to see it. I want to know what it is. And with that wanting and urgency of heart, it doesn't hide from you. It's right there. And so I'm talking about things realized by me, and I will not pretend if I'm outside of my understanding. I will point to, well, what I've heard is, but what I'm saying now is not what I've heard. It's what I know to be. The irreducible essence of reality is here. It's not something we seek or find. It's something that's naturally intrinsic to us. Now, I say that, and I also say, stay within yourself. You haven't been doing anything wrong, but as the evolution is taking us out of self, I also want to give you the dharma of that path out of ourself. So, for some of you, that will mean this weekend you'll be in kind of a settled back way of just listening and saying, well, that's interesting, and not to get too confused or get too anxious or get too fearful about what is being said, but just saying, you know, if this is true and I want to know it, I will know it. If this is true and I don't want to know it, I will stay protected within the shield of my conditioning. And it's not you're a good meditator and a bad meditator. It's timing. Each of us have our own timing to open to the mystery of what life really is. So we have to balance a relationship. We have to balance this yearning to be free that most of us can sense in ourselves, especially during this time. You see, this time, as I mentioned, is so conflictual. It brings, oh my God, there must be something else in life but all of this turmoil we're facing now. And that's how we break out of the egg, the crusted way that we perceive the world, into something fresh and new, because we're forced out. We can't stand to be in the egg anymore, shielded from the truth of light. So authentic spirituality is a state of being, not a progression towards. It's a uncovering, surrendering to what is already here, into what we are what we intrinsically are. Okay, so you don't have to. We don't have to go anywhere. It's helpful to have teachers who can point out ways to uncover the conventional wisdom into the deeper hidden layers of wisdom. In fact, that was something that Ajahn Buddhadasa, while I was a monk in Thailand, he would talk about the hidden, the conventional wisdom and the hidden wisdom that's always buried beneath the conventional wisdom. And most of us have been hearing Dharma over the years conventionally, which is how all of us start. We start by, you know, me and my breath, and we take what we are or know ourselves to be and start opening up to the wonders and mysteries of what we really are. And we do that very gradually, perhaps over years or over our whole lifetimes. So we already have been doing that, stripping away the pretension and deceptions, and not being afraid of the truth. One of the defense mechanisms that is so prevalent these days is denial. It just, how you can look at the truth, I mean, I don't think in my lifetime I've ever believed that you could look away from the truth and really gain an upper hand. You know, it's right in front of us. My obligation, my loyalty, my devotion is to the truth. It's always been that. And you open up to the truth, you open up to love. You open up to all of the ways that we have disguised ourselves away from those things that we most want, all the paramis. Anyway, I'll get to that. I'm rushing ahead here. I do have a weekend, Rodney, so slow down. So the four foundations, they start with the world as we know it. Just like when we first started meditating. And then it explores how objects form. So try to get my words, because I'll be using expressions that some of you may not have heard of that I've developed since I was the teacher at the Sims. The formed reality of life are the objects we see, formations, all of the, including thoughts, are forms that we can sense. Anything that can be sensed, seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, all that, is a formed reality, right? And that is all expressions of mind. Formed reality is mentally induced reality. And that's covering over the authentic nature of what we are. And so it's not, we don't go into this thing by force. That's what the sense of self would like to do, like to force its way in. It doesn't work that way. We have to use the discipline and the authenticity of the unconditioned to be able to part ways with the conditioned expression by asking whether it's true or not. You see, we give it a hard standard to continue on as it's been. We ask whether it's true, right? And if your heart lives within the earnestness and preciousness of truth, then you're just not going to have time to waste being false. And you'll want to seek it out. You'll want to seek out what is true. And that's the way forward when we already are the truth but don't know it, and how we convert the don't knowing of it into the knowing and living and abiding within it. That's the way. And so it's not through harsh measures, it's not through self-discipline, it's not through all of that, though they can be helpful in the beginning as we're just getting going, just like when we place our attention on our breath. Being able to sustain that attention seems like it'll be forever before I can progress and actually be able to do that. But we do that, and that's force of will, yes. But those are conditioned ways that allow us to ask questions beyond the conditioned influences we have. So those early trainings were important for most of us. Most of us just stay too long within it. Even though we know, it's like, I don't know about you, but after a certain number of years, I thought, God, is there anything more to this than just, I mean, you can keep creating Dharma subjects to talk about and to relish in, but they're not really, they're not the hidden Dharma that, going back to what I was talking about with Ajahn Buddhadasa, the hidden Dharma lies beneath the conventional layer, the conventional layer of what we take something to be. And so to really penetrate into Dharma, you have to remove that layer to be able to see with authentic eyes. So why am I picking the four foundations and the Heart Sutra to expose this authenticity? Because when I read them, and I'm amazed. It's just like the Heart Sutra just says, here's the reality. And today, my talk in the afternoon, I'll read it and we'll talk about it with much more depth. But it's laying out a view. It's saying, you want to know what reality is? And you go, well, let me take 400 years to kind of let it settle in me. I mean, you know, it's very different than the reality we believe in. But it should be, shouldn't it? I mean, it's exposing the unconditioned. The unconditioned, let me just say from the beginning, that sense that people call emptiness, that is formless awareness, formless meaning life, awareness, light, without captured within form. And so we're looking at that in absolute raw terms, the Heart Sutra. I want to know that. I said, well, what am I missing? Whoa, I'm missing a lot. And I want to know that. And the four foundations work so well within this. And for those of you who may not have read my book, Touching the Infinite, this talk adds to that book. And I would encourage, if this is a way for you to move forward and you appreciate it and you're drawn to it, you might want to go to that book because it has a lot of exercises on which to explore and to decipher our way forward. Okay, so what the four foundations is the methodology for actualizing and realizing the Heart Sutra. The Heart Sutra doesn't give you a way forward. It just says, this is reality, like that. And then we go, okay, well, now what? You know, here I am in body, in form, in me, in myself. And now I have the knowledge that all that seems to be inauthentic. What do I do? Well, if we read the four foundations, not according to the scriptural historical record, because those things drive me crazy. When I was in Sims, I did like 20 talks on the four foundations. And I kept thinking, you know, this is choking, the history of this sutta is choking off the delight of its revelation. So the four foundations explores the first foundation, and we'll be going over this much more in detail, but I'm just going to let you have a sense of where this is going. The four foundations start with the world as we know it to be, as objects. And then it says, okay, what makes this an object? If the Heart Sutra says that form is emptiness, why do I see it as form? Well, it takes you to the wordless. The first foundation is about exploring the world of objects, most importantly ourselves, keeps the object very personal and very at home. And it says, what is this? What is this reality without words? If I'm quiet, if I don't keep calling it what I've always learned it to be. And here's the cue. The learning, the memory is based in memory. And we've memorized what we are. We've memorized what everything is. And we're compelled to use that word as a form of identification. Well, that takes us to, guess what? The conceptual level of reality. That which I believe something to be, but I'm not looking under the word to see if it's really there. I'm just assuming it's foreverness. Okay? So the first foundation shows us how something, what we call something, all the different objects and our names for them, becomes nothing. Whoa. Whoa. I came to that realization giving Dharma talks on Sims. I said, wait a minute. Wait a minute, what is this thing really doing? Because it didn't make any sense to me. This, it doesn't make sense, but you think you're stupid, or I think I'm stupid, because over the millennia, it's made sense and people have added and infused their, history into, anyway, now it becomes a very known object. The very thing that's supposed to release the known becomes a solid known, well, look at the fourth foundation and see what the Buddha said about that's the known. And we're trying to escape into the unknown. You see, there's a logic to spiritual journey. There's a way forward that is very accessible if we don't fall back into our traditional perspective of how to learn about something. And what someone else knows is more important than what I know. And the way I see or what interests me is supplemental to the real truth of what life is, and I have to follow all the different scriptures and all the, no, you can do that, but understand that it's counter to the way forward. Way forward is to be refreshed, to be innocent, to be wondrous. And if you carry a handbag full of the books that tell you what everything is, where's your wonder? We're exploring what lies beyond the belief system. What lies beyond the belief system? So the okay, so the second foundation on feelings, dependent origination, reverses that, reverses the first one, which was to take the something and now see it as nothing. Okay, so that's how something can become nothing back to its original form, says the Heart Sutra. And the second foundation shows you how the nothing through feelings and dependent origination became the something we call an object or myself or whatever. It follows a path of mind that allows a nothing to become something. That's the second foundation. And it works beautifully. It works beautifully. It's like, you hit it, the hidden teaching, not the conventional teaching. The conventional teaching is what you'll read from the history books. But to refresh this thing so that it speaks to me and hopefully to you. And then there's the third foundation. The third fo anyway, I'm going to leave it there. And we're going to go into it much more in the course of this weekend. And we're going to look how each foundation holds that magic of wonder and how it inhibits the regular conditioned responses of us. And then you've got the Heart Sutra, it's always pointing its way forward. It's unrelenting in the sense that it is not compromised. And so it's hard to misread. You just don't want to, we just don't want to read it because it's so different than the reality we know to be. And yet, oh my God, everything in the heart yearns for that. Where do we think love comes from? It comes from that yearning, that wonder, that mystery that beholds us. I'm looking out from Seattle, and there's a beautiful fog outside. And I think, oh God, there's the Heart Sutra. The wonder, out of the fog and mystery of our life comes the clarity and essence of our being. So awakening is awakening into the reality free of the mind's interpretation. That's what it is. So if we keep ourselves within the interpretation and the in terms of the conventionality of what we know things to be, well, you can self-improve. You can make it work for you. The Dharma works only within the vision and view that you hold. And that's why when we see things, we don't pass them by, we let them sink in. And that changes our view of our path forward, are the insights and the realizations that mold a different reality as we are actually sitting, not just saying, oh, that was interesting. I got to go back to my breath because I'm interested in what my breath can do to open up the jhanas. And see, those, it's endless. It's endless. The conforming nature of reality is endlessly pulling on us to come back to what we know, because what we don't know is fearful, is unsettling. And that's where all of this previous work has really allowed us a sense of settledness, although it's been limited. But as I have said, because it's not really looking at what's authentic about us, but still the conventional layer of reality also has a stability of ground, and that becomes the stability of wisdom as we live within it. And that stability of wisdom then moves as stability into our more profound questions about what is the nature of life and who am I? So we have not been wasting our time. Not at all. But once we know where we truly want to go, then we have to look at our resistance to going there. And that is not a waste of time either. And if it's fear, then we settle in and look at the fear that's there and we go, okay, I'm afraid to go there. That's fair enough. But is that going to keep me from the wonders of life? Is that going to inhibit love? I have to approach this thing not from the fear side, because the fear will always tell you you're going the wrong way to go back to safety. And we have to test that formula of fear, that admonition of fear, and inch our way forward through it, through it, through it. And as I've deepened in this, facing fear has been daily. It has, sounds like a really nice life, Rodney. If I were afraid, if I kept fear true, it's not, it's another object, it's another contentious, it's another layer of falsehood. It's a hard one, challenging, but it's there. It's there. Okay, so I want to show you something, because word formation shows us a paradox. I love paradoxes because paradoxes are two seemingly opposite truths that cannot be sustained as individually, because they're counter, the logic of one counter argues the logic of the other. So let me explain what all that means. So reality, as we know it to be, shows us a paradox. we sense that there is something unseen. That's where the spiritual life of all of us, no matter where we are or what we believe we are, comes from. It comes from that sense of something not seen that's still active within us. Why is it active within us? Because it's only a conceptual layer away. It's going to be active, and it's active in all societies. It's active in all people if they would be quiet enough to access it. Many of us have a sensing of this unseen truth. So here's the paradox. We have all seen, we have seen that all formations, especially if you've been a Dharma student, that all form, all expressions of form are discontinuous. So it's discontinuous. Everything is in flux and change. Everything known is subject to change and therefore is a conditioned phenomenon. Conditioning means it has no intrinsic truth itself. It rests upon our memory and belief system invested in it, conditioned to become what we think it is. And the law of impermanence, which we all are very familiar with, encompasses all expressions of formed reality. All, everything. Everything we see, hear, touch, datum, all of it is formed reality. Okay. Look around. Now, by definition, the fundamental essence of reality, which is not conditioned because it's not a form, cannot be subject to change. Only forms are subject to change. What would the essence of reality change into? Another fundamental essence? You see, fundamental essence is fundamental essence. It's continuous in there forever. That's why it can't be a form. And we've been looking at our spiritual journey thinking that revelation will come through forms. And we may have been limiting our progress forward by staying too focused on formed reality. Because in one fell swoop, knowing that all formed reality is changing and the intrinsic truth of reality cannot change, we have eliminated all formations as being the essence of existence. Now, where are you going to look? You see? I love that because it doesn't give us any, it's an absolute truth. And so you can't find a navigating way around that one. We are not practicing to improve conditions. Although most of our practice, and to be honest, myself as well, most of my 55 years of practice have been to do just that. I'm trying to improve conditions. Instead of releasing conditions because they're changing as the untruth of reality because they're changing, I've been looking for the alteration of those changes to be the assurance I have that reality will go forward with me. Anything that is subject to change cannot be the essential nature of reality. Just let that in. You know, you can repress it later, but just let it in for a moment. We are not practicing to improve conditions. That will make our life temporarily better until those conditions change. But that changes everything because the sense of self can no longer drive the spiritual journey forward. Why can't the sense of self drive the spiritual journey forward? Listen, because the sense of self is a conditioned phenomenon and it's changing too. And I can't rely on it to be of any substance. Now we've taken away our foothold here. We've taken it away. So there are seemingly two realities at play. The mind's conditioned reality of me and you and the world and all that we have seen, And the other reality is the unconditioned, which is the irreducible essence of all reality. Irreducible essence of all reality. It can be sensed, but it cannot be known as we would know an object. The spiritual journey begins where we are and uses awareness and mindfulness to move us forward. So I want to bring back insight meditation. I am an insight meditation teacher. I've never pretended to be a Zen teacher or a Dzogchen teacher or whatever. If I know anything about it, it was because I was interested in what they were saying about what I was interested in insight meditation. We learn two different qualities are simultaneously occurring. The forms that we sense, okay, that's the forms that when we sit down in meditation, the forms that we observe, and the awareness that sees those. Okay, so the essence of this is learning to distinguish the formations that we look at from the awareness that sees the formation. Now listen, the awareness that sees the formation is the unconditioned. It's the beginning access to formless reality. Why don't we see that? Because we're not interested in the awareness. We're interested in the forms we see. We don't even care what the awareness is. The awareness is mine. It's under my ability. I will shine it where I want it to go and to see the forms that I want to see. Our whole life in Dharma has been around awareness seeing forms, not the awareness itself. But the awareness itself is formless. Formless. That which sees is formless awareness. Formless awareness. That what it sees, because now, okay, so I'm going to talk more about this afternoon. So I don't want to go too far into it, but it's a very important access point to our meditation to be able to see what it is we're doing from the very beginning of our meditation until we have understood that forms can't be the final answer. And then we may just shift the level of our attention so that we include the awareness. Now just come with me here, if you will. You see, it's that accessible. When you're no longer focused on forms, including the sense of I, which is a formation, awareness floods the landscape. And it's still, STILL. It is still. It's not moving because it doesn't change. It all comes back. It all feeds its truth. All of this feeds its truth. Learning to distinguish formations from the awareness that sees the formation is the beginning of the discovery of formless reality. More about this again this afternoon. In conventional meditation practice, formed reality is our focus. The spiritual journey is to abide in the essence. Now listen to this, because you think, I can't live without knowing what everything is. Is he trying to take away objects from my life? No. The spiritual journey is to abide in the essence of formless reality as the essence while living fully within the interconnected whole of life and all of its facets, all the objects. Right? You don't forget what a cup. You don't forget that. Believe me, you don't forget that. You don't have to worry about losing or stumbling over or into something because you didn't realize it was form. You'll realize it's form. So some of us will stay within formed reality for good reasons. We need the time to nurture for self-care, to establish stability, to move forward. And now self-care, when we have been a self, is pretty, it's a pretty rugged landscape. No one's self that I know of is just smooth and unroughed. It feels like, you know, you've hooked your golf ball into very deep rough. And we need time to nurture that self-care, to establish stability, to move forward. So it hasn't been a waste of time. We begin to see that the sense of self is the obstacle, though, and to make sure how to move forward given that. And the Heart Sutra shows us the view of a world that is unequivocally forever the same. Formless awareness. And we can't use ourselves. And this is, I'm going to save more of a discussion about this until the later talks. But we can't use ourself, which is a formed, conceptual, conditioned sense of me, to power our way forward. Because that's like ignorance trying to overcompensate for ignorance. Ignorance, I am ignorance. I, confession. I am ignorance. All of us need to open to that confession. And that's why we are a distorter of reality. We carry the distortions of reality within our perceptions of objects. And we do that because it saves us. If I let go of objects, I don't know who I am. But as long as I can keep objects known to me, I can stay steady in myself, who is also an object. So I hope all this is making some sense to you, my friends. If we'll have question and answers, we won't. I won't leave you thinking that this is the complete story. You can, we can ask your questions, and I will give plenty of time for that. Okay, that's it for now. Now, if I can figure out where the where the schedule is, that's right in front of my eyes. We're going to take a we're going to take a break until 10:15. Walking, just go outside. I don't know if it's raining. You know, just go get some fresh air. I gave you a lot. Every talk is going to be like this. Strap yourself in. Okay. Be well. And then we'll meet back at 10:30. 10:30, wait a second. 10:15. I don't know where I am. But anyway, we'll meet back at 10:30 for a sitting. So it's not just, it's, you know, you have like a half an hour or something. To clear your mind so that you don't, well, what's he talking about? I don't know what I'm lost. Don't do that. Don't do that. Just let it sit. Just let it sit with you. As an unknown, let it sit with you. Wait a minute. Before you go, I just want to see everybody. There we go. So many friends. So many friends. I can't point you all out, but you know I love you. I don't say that. That's not a word that comes, I love you. It doesn't come comfortably to me. But when I see you, it comes comfortably. Wow. Okay. Okay.